unmute yourself and introduce.
Hi there. I won't share my video today, but my name is Carla. I work with Women Building Futures. Looking forward to today's session because a lot of the material that we are usually deliver face to face has been transferred to the online. So I find that the uptake on online learning is really there's a lot of drop off. So I'm just wanting to learn a little bit more about some of the shared information, I guess. Thank you.
Welcome, Kathy. That's fine. So it says the name Kitlost, KITLOST. I'm a library technician at Willamette Tribal College, which is in Edmonton, Alberta, and I'm not having a mic or webcam, but she can hear us clearly. Welcome. And say hi to Nicole. Welcome. Miss Adala. Adala, please. Interest in personal learning.
Hi, my name is Atieno Adala. I'm with the United States International University in Nairobi, Kenya. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to this workshop, webinar.
Welcome. So I do see on the screen Jasena, so please connect into audio. If you've been able to connect to audio, then please introduce yourself. You can use what you prefer. If you prefer to type in chat, that's fine too. And if you would like to unmute and introduce yourself, that's awesome too. I'm going to invite our instructor, presenter we are featuring for today, Dr. Stephen Downs, to please introduce himself and to start the presentation.
Okay, well, hello everyone. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Stephen Downs, as you probably already know, and I work with the National Research Council of Canada. I'm based in Ottawa, although of course all of our offices are closed these days. So I'm coming to you from my home in the village of Castleman. It's in eastern Ontario. It's not far from where I grew up. And I'm pleased to be here. Now, just to confirm, it said that this is a two-hour session. That's correct, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So we could do a few things. I could talk non-stop for 2 hours, but probably that wouldn't be a whole lot of fun. But I could do it. Or we can have conversation and discussion as we go through. That will, of course, depend on all of you. There's not a lot of us here. We're a small but mighty group. But the more you participate, the less you have to listen to me. So consider that to be an inducement. So now I can share the slides. And I tried to set something up at the last minute to share the slides and my video all at the same time, and it failed utterly, and it messed up my headphones. But I think I can still share my slides. Here we go. Let's do it this way. I think this might be a bit better. All right. So now you should be seeing my slides. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So, because there's a fair amount of time, I want to approach this subject from a couple of different directions. The topic is personal learning, taking ownership of learning online. Sorry about using the same word twice in a single headline. I try not to do that, but sometimes I do. So let me first of all give you a bit of background about who I am. I've been working in this field for a very long time. I wonder, are you able to read that okay?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm sensitive that some people might not be able to see this on a screen, that you're on a telephone only. And so I'll make sure that the things that I show that I'm also describing as well, as much as possible. And also I'm not able to see the chat while I'm sharing the screen. That's not good.
I can read the chat for you if comments are
posted. Okay, that would be really helpful. Yeah, I thought I'd be able to see the chat, but no. So I just want to be sensitive to that. If you're not able to follow, if I've made something not obvious, please stop me and I'll make sure that that we're interacting properly. As well, feel free, any of you at any time, to ask a question, make a comment, disagree with me. I might be the presenter here, but I think everybody has contributions to make, and you should feel very welcome to make those contributions. That's important to me and to this session.
So, Dr. Dant, is it possible to show us full screen, your slide?
Yes.
That is a comment by Sharon, then we'll be able to see more. Yes.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, most of the slides are not this tiny. okay. So, this is a whole bunch of stuff that I've done over the years. Really, my work in this area began in the 1980s. On here it shows some of my major papers and presentations, but I want to add to that that I've been involved in teaching online through all of that time. When was it? 1986, 87. I started with Athabasca University in Alberta, which some of you may be quite familiar with. I did a lot of work with them over 7 years, including, interestingly, going out to places like Yellowhead Tribal Council, to Alberta Vocational College up in Gruyard, to Blue Quills in St. Paul, teaching logic courses. Sometimes those went well, sometimes they didn't go well, but it was certainly a learning experience for me. I've spent time at Assiniboine Community College in Manitoba, developing their online program. And for the last 20 years, almost, I've been working with the National Research Council of Canada, first based in New Brunswick, in Moncton, and more recently, the last 2 or 3 years, here in Ottawa. And I am more surprised than anyone that I've managed to continue working with a government job for 20 years. I'm the last person I ever expected to do that. My background is as a philosopher. My degrees are in philosophy. My specialization is philosophy of knowledge, philosophy of science, and philosophy of mind. But I've done a lot of work in online learning, new media, and computer technology since then. I've built applications, I run my own newsletter, etc. I hate to say all this because it sounds like, you know, I'm making myself a big deal, which I'm not, really. But what I want to be able to establish here is that What I say in this presentation comes from a concrete background of practical experience in the field. I've been doing this for a long time, and these are some of the things that I've learned doing it. Talk a wee bit about how I do my work as well, because I'm not your ordinary researcher. Your ordinary researcher will conduct or create a hypothesis, go out, do a study, maybe some surveys or forms or whatever, and then see whether that hypothesis was validated. I work very differently, and this is important because this research workflow that I have informs a lot of what I have to say about personal learning, because really research is a type of learning. And I have a four-stage process: aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward. And what I'm trying to do with this four-stage process is to experience directly as much of the field as I can, and from that experience, and by manipulating and working with that experience and trying things and doing projects, etc., I'm trying to find patterns, whatever they are. And some people call these hypotheses, but I don't. I just say, here's something I think happens. Here's a regularity out there I see in the world. Whatever. Just something that seems interesting to me. And then I try to apply that knowledge both in my online courses. Some of you may know me as the person who created the world's first MOOC. That was just, you know, one of these projects, and it proved to be fairly successful. I've had way many more failures than I've had successes, but the MOOC was a success. And I work in various projects, both personal projects and as well numerous projects that I do as part of my job as a researcher with the federal government. So I've worked with the School of Public Service, I've worked with Desire to Learn, I've worked with Treasury Board, and so on. So that's a bit about me. So that's the boring part. Here are the takeaways, if you will. Although, honestly, you know, I hope you get what you want out of it, and not necessarily simply what I have to give you or what I think you should take away. We'll come back to that subject. I hope you appreciate, after we're done, the difference between personalized learning and personal learning. I hope you appreciate why personal learning is important, why it matters for school or for success of students, for success of learners, and indeed for your own success as an online learner. I hope you are able to see the key starting points, and indeed even some of what I call guerrilla tactics to help you with personal learning, and develop for yourself strategies to implement personal learning, both for yourself as a learner, but also from the perspective of a teacher or someone who's sharing knowledge in the community. So that's the plan. Now that said, at any point, if you don't like that plan, we can change the plan. I prepare presentations, but really this presentation isn't for me, it's for you. I'm the resource here, and if you'd rather talk about something different, I'm totally up for it. No problem at all. So, I've divided this into two major sections. First of all, That's just my message on my phone. The practical side of personal learning, we'll look at three concepts: relevance, usability, interactivity, starting points for those, and supporting them for yourself. And I will add that the slides from this presentation will be available at the URL that you can see, www.downes, that's downes.ca/presentation/525. The second part, we'll look at the theory of personal learning. So here we're approaching it more from an institutional perspective or an instructional perspective. I'll distinguish between personal learning and personalized learning in a more formal way, and then talk about the starting points and how to support personal learning for your learners or students online. So that's the plan. How does that sound to people? And either we're broken or okay.
Sounds good to me. I'm kind of standing up a bit because I was just on another Zoom sitting for an hour, so I got to stand a little bit, and so my response might be a little slow, but yeah, it sounds good to me. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool. And I got a few comments here in the chat area. That sounds good. Manisha's saying she likes the feed forward process. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes. I like, never connected it with open education process because, you know, you're using repurpose, remix, and feed forward when we are, you know, learning, like we learn some techniques from you, and feed forward when we use it in our courses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard that fail forward.
Yeah.
I've heard more, I call it learn forward. But feed forward is the first time I'm hearing, you know, and it is feed forward because it's not just content, you know, it's more it'll change your practice, I think. So
yeah.
It's something new. Like, I'm not, this is the first time I've seen information being presented in this manner.
Really? Okay. Well, that's, actually, I'm not surprised, but I'm glad, because there is a large community of people who actually does learn this way. It's not the traditional instructional model that is used in schools or universities. It's a mechanism for individual, or as I say, personal learning. Okay, good. Then I will proceed back to sharing the screen. Back to my slides. Gotta find my slides. There we go. Oh, here we go. We'll go with this. All right. And we're sharing again. Oops. Okay. So the first part is the practical part. And then the practical part, there are three principles. Now, just as a brief aside, when I say there are three of this or four of this or identify principles of that, I'm not saying that here is the way the world is, right? What I'm saying is, here's how I've divided things up. You don't have to divide things up this way, but I find it useful. So this is a mechanism rather than a statement about the world. The real important parts are, you know, in the details and not in the overall dividing up. But I divide things up like this to make them more accessible and more useful, easier to remember. But that's the only reason. So, three principles. Maybe there's four, maybe there's two, but I've come up with three. First one is interaction. Participation in a learning community or community of practice. The second thing, usability. What I mean by usability is simplicity and consistency. And we'll talk about that. The third principle is relevance. You can also use the word salience. It's a $10 word that means relevance. That is, learning that is relevant to you now. Learning that is important to you now. So for the rest of this first part, I'll be talking about these three principles. And basically, I'll discuss each one of these in turn and pause in between each of these for any comments or questions that you may have. But again, feel free to interrupt me at any time. So, interaction, that's where we're going to begin. Interaction, the capacity to communicate with other people interested in the same topic or using the same online resource. There are all kinds of formal definitions of interaction, but really I think of it as conversation, the sending of information back and forth, communication. The feed forward aspect is a big part of interaction. In fact, the whole mechanism that I described, aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward, all of this is a system for interaction, isn't it? I'm hearing or receiving content from or messages from people who are out there, and then I'm feeding my own responses to those forward. There are two major reasons why these are important for us as learners. The first is the human contact. We learn mostly, not exclusively, but mostly from other people. So we want them to talk to us, or write to us, or send a video to us, or whatever. And then the other reason is the content. We want them to give us information. You know, a bit like what we're doing here, I'm giving you content, but I'm also giving you a voice, and some opportunity for dialogue. And so we're doing more, it's more than me just writing a book and you reading the book and hoping everything works out. The interaction, the back and forth, is really what underlies a lot of the learning that takes place. So, the big message I've had for students over the last 20, 25 years is, you cannot depend on traditional learning. And by traditional learning, let me be very clear. By traditional learning, what I mean is learning as it is conducted in existing formal institutions of learning, such as schools or colleges or universities. I'm not referring to traditional learning that is learning based on traditions or cultures. That's not what I mean. Traditional learning specifically refers to formal learning practices. And these formal learning practices are, you know, sometimes they'll support interactivity and they're getting better at it, but by and large, it's mostly based on the broadcast model. One person talks, everyone listens. And even where they have interactivity, it's often separated from the actual learning experience itself. First, someone will talk to you, and then in a different place, there will be some sort of interaction. Now, that's not to say there should be no broadcast. We're doing a bit of a broadcast here, and that's okay. But to support your own personal learning, you can't just depend on the broadcasts. You need this interactivity. This is what makes your learning personal to you. So how do you get that? How do you replace interactivity? How do you replace the traditional non-interactive learning with your own interactivity? Basically, build your own interaction network. And that's what I did with my mechanism, right? My research method. I built my own interaction network, where you place yourself and not the content that you're learning at the center of it. This diagram here shows how, if we look at learning from that perspective with the self at the center, then we reach out to different things that are available online. We reach out to blogging websites. We reach out to photo websites like Flickr, maybe a personal hosting site like Reclaim Hosting, maybe a to-do list like 43 things. There are hundreds, thousands of ways that, you know, you can connect to other people online. This list changes over time. These days people are using social media and such. But the main point here is that you need to give yourself many additional ways to interact with other people rather than depending on a learning institution to provide all of that for you. So, what are some of these mechanisms? Email and mailing lists are great. Google Groups is a place that I look for mailing lists, institutional mailing lists. A lot of the websites that you may visit, if you did, say, a Google search, a lot of them will say, you know, keep up with us, follow us on our mailing list. I actually do sign up for these mailing lists, although what I've done is I've created a separate email account on Google for newsletters. And so all of my mailing lists go into the separate account. The address is newsletters@downs.ca. And you can do that with Google, or you can just create your own. You can create multiple identities on Google. I create one specifically for mailing lists, and then I sign up, any website that's interesting to me, I sign up to that mailing list. And so from time to time, I go to that account on Google and I read through the mailings, all the email that I got. So I've got this, it's like a private resource base that comes to me and it's free. Another mechanism is blogging. Blogging is a way of sharing, obviously, but it also becomes a way of interacting with other people, particularly if when you blog something, you share it with your friends or your family or on social networks or whatever. The point here is, by giving something to the community, you create the condition where the community can respond. They're not going to respond to you if you don't say anything. So blogging creates interactivity, and it creates this alternative channel outside traditional education. There are many places you can blog. It's free. WordPress, WordPress.com, for example. EduBlogs is a place specifically for education. Blogger is a service that I use. Actually, I use WordPress and Blogger because I have more than one blog. I have one blog for, I have a blog for my photos and my art. I have a blog for educational related stuff, and I have a blog for political commentary. And then I have a few more that I just use as scratch pads. And again, why not? if you really want to get a lot of followers, you would have just one blog. But if the idea is just to share, then having a different blog for different kind of content is useful. Personal communication. This is what most people are using these days. I'm not such a fan of short messaging, but certainly acknowledge that a lot of interactivity is created by it. Instant messaging, you probably already use instant messaging. Skype for video conference. These days now we have Zoom that we're using now here. Google Meet, Microsoft Teams. These are all good systems. I do not recommend Adobe Connect, and I do not recommend WebEx. That's the previous generation of video conferencing or personal communication tools, and they're just not as usable. That's why we're using Zoom. It works really well. Social networks, you're probably already on social networks, but think of them as well as learning networks. I use Twitter and Mastodon and LinkedIn. Twitter, everyone knows about Twitter. It's, you know, your online chatterbox place. Mastodon is a distributed version of Twitter. It's a lot like Twitter, but it's a lot more difficult for people to, you know, make it all about themselves. It's, you know, I could do a whole other session on Mastodon, but I do recommend you take a look. I find it quite useful. LinkedIn is useful for professional marketing, professional communications. It's getting a bit more marketing than professional these days, but it's still very useful. Another thing I use is RSS. RSS is my major tool for aggregating content from other sites. Again, I could do a whole discussion of this, but if you go to feedly.com, that's an RSS reader, and going to that site will get you started on RSS. And you can subscribe to a large number of weblogs and news feeds from people all around the world, and they're a great source of information. My personal subscriptions, I subscribe to about 800 different feeds, all about online learning, new media, artificial intelligence, etc. And stuff comes out in RSS long before it appears in print media or in academic journals. So for me, it's a huge advantage to have this. Some principles for interaction. Pull is better than push. What I mean by that is defining what you want and retrieving it is better than signing up for, you know, broadcast models like even like journals or newspapers. It's hard to define, but basically the message here is it's easier to select for what you want than it is to filter out what you don't want. And that's one of the reasons why I don't use Facebook. Facebook says, oh no, I mean, we'll push the newsfeed at you. And then you can filter your newsfeed for the things you don't want. So you're only spending time on Facebook tweaking for all the stuff you don't want. And they're pushing stuff at you that you probably don't want. Similarly with YouTube. I do use YouTube, but I'm very selective with YouTube. And I subscribe to channels that I want, and I depend on that rather than just the main YouTube feed, because YouTube will recommend stuff really that I don't want. And now I'm in this business again of trying to filter out the stuff I don't want. Pick what you want is the main message here. Another principle of interaction, speak in your own voice. And that's less, you know, I don't have to say that as much now as I used to. But people used to, and sometimes still do, put on this, you know, this is my internet voice, and I will market myself, brand Stephen, stuff like that's, well, horrible. and people detect that. If you're not authentic, people will see that. If you are authentic, you can have real conversations and you will learn more. Share your knowledge. Share. Somebody talked about open content, open educational resources. For me here, the fundamental principle is sharing, right? The more you share, the more people will talk to you. The more people talk to you, the more you learn. That has been the basis of my career. I would not have a career otherwise. You know, if I just tried to depend on, you know, my education and my training, the traditional in-class kind of stuff, I'd be, I guess, your average philosopher. But by sharing, and sharing freely and openly to, well, anyone who would listen, I've gotten to meet so many people and had so many conversations with people I would never have expected, that I've learned a ton over the years. And that, more than anything else, has led me to the position where I am now. But it has to be a habit and it has to be priority. I have my newsletter. I send it out every day. I've sent it out every day since May of 2001. And you might think, well, that's an awful lot of work. And it is an awful lot of work. But it's an hour a day. And it doesn't matter what else I'm doing. For that hour a day, I'm doing my newsletter and sending it out. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, I have to find the stuff to put in the newsletter, which means I'm doing some deliberate learning for an hour every day. And then by sharing it, I invite all kinds of comments, responses, etc. And it creates that, you know, just that continuing flow of interactivity. I've spent a lot of time on interaction, more than I will maybe on the other sections, but I think this is the key principle for personal learning from a practical perspective is interaction. George Siemens and I came up with a learning theory called connectivism. Connectivism is about interaction. Connectivism is the idea that learning is based on the connections that we form with other people. That knowledge is the organization of connections in the mind, in society, in the world. And I think to a large degree that that's true. And because of that, the better you are at connecting, the more integrated you are into this network of connections, the more you are able to learn. Now, often you will not be provided with opportunities to interact. You know, let's even take this presentation, right? There's five of you, one of me. You know, it's not the best environment for interacting. It's Zoom. You know, it's a Zoom lecture, talk, presentation, whatever. You know, the purpose is a bit different. So, create your own interaction. For example, if interaction isn't provided, if you're taking a MOOC on Coursera or edX, for example, they're not really supporting interaction. So if it isn't provided, create it. For example, if you're in a talk like this, blog it. okay, you don't have to blog this one, but whatever, right? A big source of blogs for me is if I try to do something, you know, if I'm trying to write a certain piece of code or learn how to use a certain application, I'll actually blog that as I go through. So, you know, I'll have something like installing Drupal part one, and I'll write about my experience. And I get a lot of feedback and response from that. You know, not my very first blog, but after I've written 100 or so of them, people notice. Guerrilla tactic. If your software doesn't support interaction, add it. This is for people who are using learning management systems and things like that. You can actually use HTML to embed content, interactive content, right into web pages. And so anytime you're working with software that doesn't support interaction, find yourself some other way to add interaction. Doesn't matter what it is, but find a way to add the interaction to that experience. Use back channels. That's probably the most effective. In a lot of talks that I do like this, I expect, and you know, especially at a conference or something like that, where there's a large group of people listening, people use back channels. They use their own private communications and they make comments back and forth to themselves during the talk. Twitter is very popular for this, of course. But as well, you can use instant messaging, you can use email, whatever. The main idea here is that you have your own one-to-one or one-to-small group communication behind everything else. So it's your own communication, not through an official channel. So that's the first, interactivity. And let me pause here for a moment. I'll stop the share, and that tells me what time it is. Okay. See if you have any comments, etc. for me. And I'm also looking at the chat feed. I do see, Sharon, your, please email the URL for the PowerPoint. What I'll do, in fact, is I'll put it, and it's not going to be there yet, but it'll be there later. I'll send you the URL for the presentation.
What are the back channels you're mentioning? Examples.
So, okay. So suppose we're having this conversation right now, and you're looking at it on the computer screen. You could also have another window open to Twitter. And you could make a comment on Twitter about this talk. You know, that Stephen Downs sure talks a lot or whatever. And then other people who are in this, you know, who are watching this presentation could see that on Twitter and respond to it. So the idea is you to have a private conversation that isn't visible necessarily to the person giving the talk. That's why it's called a back channel. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So along with Twitter, you were mentioning one more other source, started with M. What's that? I've not heard about it.
Yeah, it's called Mastodon. Mastodon. Whoops. Mastodon. Mastodon. Is very similar to Twitter. It's what's called a federated social network, which means that there are different instances of Mastodon that you can join. So if you, the website is, the main website is mastodon.social. typing it into the chat. So when you go there, I think this is still the case. I just log in, right? But when you go there, you have a number of different places you can go to join in. But the thing is, it doesn't matter which place you join. It's all part of the same big network. But it's not owned by one company like Twitter. The instances are owned by individuals or by small groups. Otherwise, it's just like Twitter. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry, I thought you had finished. I was going to say I had a question about blogging.
Yes.
Like how much, it seems like it's a lot of work to do it every day. And how good does your written blog have to be? And also, do people give negative comments? How does one deal with stuff like that?
Okay. Doesn't have to be very good. It'll get better on its own. It does take work, but the trick to that is to allocate a certain amount of time for yourself. You don't have to do it every day, and most people don't. But you should do it like once a week. I do it once a day, but it's one of these things, right? The more effort you put into it, the more you get out of it. But when you have a regular schedule like that, what you'll find that you're doing is planning ahead with different topics that you might blog about, whatever is of interest to you. And I find myself doing that, where, you know, I kind of take notes on the side. Oh, yeah, data analytics. Here's a thing. Maybe I'll write a blog post about that sometime in the future. And that's to me, that's the secret of blogging is you're always responding to something. It's never the case, never, that you just open up a blog, you know, a blank page, and just start typing things that you think of. Nobody can do that. Well, I mean, you can, but it's really hard, and it's not good. So the trick to blogging is to spend as much time reading as you do writing, and then you're responding to something, and I don't want to say it doesn't matter what the response is, but it almost doesn't matter what the response is. The main point is you're reading, you're responding. The risk, you asked about negative comments. The first big risk is no comments. That's harder to deal with. It really is. And that's what you will have at the beginning. And maybe even forever. You have to be ready for that. 99% of the stuff that I write, I get no comments. I know people are reading them because they mention them to me later, but they don't comment. You know, people used to comment a lot, but now they don't so much. Maybe they might only comment on Twitter or on Facebook, where I won't even see it because I'm not on Facebook. And you respond to that by just sharing it as widely as you can. If you write a blog post, then you put the link on Twitter. If you use email, you create a signature at the bottom where you put your name, your email address, and the URL of your blog, right? So that people know where it exists. I used to suggest to people that if they have business cards, put their blog or their home website on your business card. I used to be able to actually put it on my NRC business card, and then they said, no, you're not allowed to do that. So I created my own business cards. And those are what I hand out at conferences or whatever. If people respond negatively, you know, and I've been really criticized sometimes, and the best and fairest response that I've had is, thank you for caring so much to make these comments. You know, I've had people really angry at some of the stuff I've written. And you know, even attacking me personally, which takes a bit of dealing with. It's not easy when you're being attacked personally. But my thought was, it's obvious that they cared a lot about this. You know, and in the end, negative comments are feedback. Negative comments are useful. Negative comments make you think, maybe I was wrong, possibly. Or, you know, they cause you to review why you wrote what you wrote and say, well, no, I still think I'm right, and that person is just wrong. You know, people, it's hard to deal with negative comments, but they're a fact of life, and you know, you just accept them. That said, and here's the other point, I don't put up with abuse, and you shouldn't either. And I'm very lucky because I'm part of the demographic, white, male, professional. I get the least amount of abuse of anyone. And other people, women especially, get a lot of abuse, or can get a lot of abuse. And my response to that, when I get it, and this is what I recommend to others, delete it. Don't respond to it. Don't acknowledge it. Just simply delete it, and block it, because nobody should have to put up with abuse, especially on your own website. So for me, on my blogs, all of the comments are moderated. And when I'm reading through the comments and I'm moderating them, as soon as I see that this comment is going in an abusive direction, I delete it. I don't read the rest, I just delete it. Because, you know, that can be harmful to you. And I learned that the hard way. I mean, I used to read even the abusive criticisms and did not have a good reaction to that. But, you know, ultimately, and if you're really worried about that, and or if you're having a lot of problems with that, turn off the comments. A lot of people do that. And that's perfectly okay, too, because the interaction is still happening. You're still reading, you're still responding. You know, the comments are the least of it. The main thing is you reading, you responding. And so, you know, there's no reason why you should have anything you don't want on your own website. But that's a good question. It's an important question. And I think the same is true with Twitter, and the same is true with Facebook and anything else, right? You know, if these forms of interaction are making you unhappy for whatever reason, cut them off. They're harmful. There are so many alternatives, and this is why I use, say, Mastodon. There are so many alternatives that it's not necessary to use a harmful form of interaction. Did that help?
Yes, that's very helpful.
Okay, I'm going to move on. Now, I've totally, you know, I see it's 12:16 here. Which makes it 10:16 there. So I've completely messed up my timing and schedule, because I can be really bad at this sometimes. But we'll go back to the slides. I'm going to move a bit more briskly through the next two sections. But I think you've got a flavor of this now, and then we'll come back to more conversation, and then I'll talk about the theory some. But I'm not going to worry if I don't get through all of the slides, because that's life. My history is a series of failures. And the slides are available. And as well, you know, I mean, if you go to that presentation page once it's up, is it? Yeah, it will be 525. You'll be able to access another 500 of my presentations. So, plus all of the slides for this one. So there's plenty of stuff. It won't matter so much if we don't cover everything, because, and we don't have to, it's not about the content anyways. It's about the interaction, the community. Right. Share screen. PowerPoint slideshow. Share. All right, usability. So, usability at heart is the idea of taking stuff that isn't useful to you and making it useful. This, to a large degree, is the a remix and repurpose part of aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward. And it's partly about selecting the right content, but mostly about making the content right for you. So there are two elements of usability that I've identified here. There are other elements, but these are the two that matter to me. Consistency and simplicity. So consistency is basically knowing what to expect. And simplicity is I can understand it. These, you know, you notice how these are very personal definitions of consistency and simplicity. And that's how, just as an aside, that's how I work. There are official definitions of usability and consistency and all of that. But I take these definitions and I revise them just for me, right? I mean, I don't go out proclaiming to the world necessarily, but for me, I take these definitions and I make them personal and relevant to me. So for me, consistency is I know what to expect. Now, that's not the formal definition of consistency, but that's what it means to me. And that overall is what I mean by usability, right? It's not necessary for you to try to think and see the world according to more formal definitions. Now, these formal definitions are useful. They certainly aid in communication, but when we're talking about just your own personal learning, these are just tools. Words are just tools, meanings are just tools, and you can work with them to make them work for you. And this is an example, right? I take a word like consistency, and when I try to understand what consistency means for myself, I use the principle, I know what to expect. And that's a really good principle for me. Let's expand on this a bit. Oh, silly thing. I'm screen sharing, but I'm not moving my slide forward. There we go. All right, consistency. Yes, take charge of your learning, right? Don't depend on other people for consistency. Other people won't necessarily enable you conditions where you can expect what's coming next. And I'm just admiring my cow picture. Okay, so How do you do consistency for yourself? First of all, clarify first principles. What I mean by that is, think about what you believe about the topic at hand. If we're talking about learning, for example, what do you believe about learning? If we're talking about forestry, it's what do you believe about forestry? Now, these might change, that's okay, but you are where you are, right? So think about how do you understand these things? So I have, for example, my understanding of learning theory. I mentioned it a bit earlier about interactivity and connections and that, right? Learning is managing, creating, working through these connections. That's what learning is to me. Right. So think about the topic, clarify your first principles. Then, based on these principles, organize your knowledge. One thing you could do, for example, is make your own content management system. Now, I no longer recommend using Drupal. But you might make your own. What would you make? You might use a concept mapping tool. You might create a database, which is what I did. I used to, when I was a university student, I created graphs to organize my knowledge. And what I do is, and they're sort of called concept maps today, but I'd take a philosopher and I'd draw a line from that philosopher to another philosopher who was influenced by the first philosopher. And then I'd draw another line to another philosopher. So I'd draw connections from philosopher to philosopher to philosopher. A very famous one is, you know, from Socrates to Plato, and then from Plato to Aristotle. So I started with some of these basic ones, but then every time I came across a new philosopher, I'd ask myself, who were they influenced by? And I'd draw that line. I ended up with a huge map of all of the philosophers. Talk about a way to understand the history of philosophy. So I just did that on paper, because this was in the 1980s. There weren't these tools available. And, you know, paper's good enough. I might, you know, a good exercise, you know, what are the first principles of learning? My five principles of learning, and then I might put some sub-principles under them. And the idea here is just to organize my knowledge. Organize what I already know. Then, as stuff comes in, as you're reading stuff, number one, simplify it, and then number two, put it into your own knowledge base. And you can actually explicitly write it down, or, you know, these days put it into a computer document, or you can just think of it that way, just thinking of it as a perspective. I'll give you a quick and sloppy example. Let me just share my web screen. I said I would go through this fast. I'm such a liar. I'm sorry. Okay.
We try to invite you to do a series of presentations, so don't rush. We're learning a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I might do a part two to this later. That might be the way to go. Yeah, that's a good...
But don't rush, because we want to learn,
Yeah. No, these I'm...
concepts are really important, you know.
I'm not rushing. I should... Yeah. What I'm doing is talking to myself, saying, "Yeah, I should rush. I should rush." But then the voice of reason is, "No, don't rush. Take your time. I can always come back and do another one, just like you say." Assuming you liked the first one. All right. So here's what I did. This is a web page I created for myself. It's all the stuff that I access. And I'll actually put that into the chat. Except I can't. Well, I've saved it. Here we go. No. Okay, well, I'll put the URL in the chat once I'm... here we go. I know what to do.
Is this just the table format in which you've written everything, like different tools you use?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
In terms of structure, is this in a table format where you've written down all the tools you use and...
Yeah, basically, yeah. These are... What this is... This is my personal start page. And... Each one of these is a link. One of these is a link to Google Docs, which is where I wanted to go. But they're all links to all the different services and tools that I use. So here are my Google documents, and this is where I'm organizing my thinking now. So one of my documents is my research. This is a Google Doc. Oh, actually, it's right now it's a web page. So here is me organizing some of my thinking. I'm sorry that's not very big. Maybe I can make that bigger for...
Do you need to show your screen again because you're not able to see it?
Yeah. Oops. How's that?
We're just able to see you, I think,
slightly. Oh, I'm not sharing. Duh. Okay, sorry about that. All right. Yeah. There we go. All right. So, okay. Here's the start screen that I mentioned earlier, and I've put the URL in the chat. I made this for me. You would make a personal one of these for you. Then here is a page I created where I'm organizing my thinking, just like I said in that presentation, right? I'm organizing my thinking. So here's ethics, analytics, and the duty of care, which is a topic that I've been working on. E-learning 3.0 is another topic. Distributed ledger technology, or blockchain. Been doing a lot of work on that. Creating an online community. This is a class or conference. This is all of the technology for that. So those are my four main things that I have going on right now. So... one of those, well, I'll come back to it. So one of those is, say, this ethics and analytics. So what I've done, right, so now I've created a Google Doc. And now here, this is just one subject, right, the duty of care in that larger topic. And so... I'm just taking notes. I'm using the headlines here. Like anytime, if I create a headline, right, and now I highlight this and say, okay, this is a heading, a big heading. And there it is, right? So I use the headlines to create a table of contents on the left-hand side here. And so these headlines are all the different subtopics. And then as I read stuff, Here's Feminist Ethics from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. Here's Ethics of Care from Encyclopedia Britannica. So on, right? Here's an article I ran across by Stephanie Collins, The Core of Care Ethics. And what I've done, this is really simple, isn't it? Skepticism about principles, the value of religion. So I've taken that entire article and reduced it to 7 words. Now, if I'm writing a paper or something like that later on, I'll go back to this and expand on it. But for now, to keep things usable, I've reduced it to 7 words. And the 7 words that are useful to me. Other people might read that and come up with completely different words to summarize that. But this is how this article can be understood here. This is useful to me here now. And that's what I do. So I don't always use Google Docs to organize. If you're not sure. I think it always shows, show document outline. When you first start Google Docs, it'll look like this, and you'll be going, where's the table of contents? View, show document outline. And that's the way to get that table of contents. How's that for useful practical advice? So, we come back to the presentation. Right. So you see what I've done, right? I've taken charge. I've clarified my first principles, right? The things that I'm interested in, the way I would subdivide those. Then I've organized my knowledge, in this case using Google Docs, which is free and easy to use. And even better, with Google Docs, what's even better is I can share it with the world. And that's what I did with my tools. Let me stop share here. I'm going to go back to that. Share. No, this one. So, this quick tech guide is a Google Doc. This is everything you need for creating an online community class or conference. These things here in the upper right hand corner, these little round circles, are people who are looking at this document right now. They could actually edit it if I allowed, and there's a link here right at the top, share. And this is how you can share with other people and groups. So what I've done is I've used this to, actually I did it as a response to the whole COVID thing. So I created this document, all of these different topics, resources for under each one of these topics, things that I already knew about. Again, real simple, very simple description, making it usable for me and hopefully for other people. And then I shared it. So now hundreds, maybe thousands, who knows how many of people have been able to use this guide. It's just a way for me to organize my thinking. But then I shared it. Then I put the link on Twitter and in my newsletter. And now I've created this mechanism, and what's happening is people are now suggesting to me things that I can put in here. They've suggested new categories, new ways of organizing it. Some of the suggestions I accept, some of them I didn't. But if you're doing work online and wondering what tools you can use for free, for me that was important, for free, then you can go to this website. Somebody, I didn't do this, somebody created a short URL for sharing this, and I'll put that in the chat window as well, using Bitly. So thanks to them, I can share this really easily. So that's the sort of thing you can do by, you know, you focus on making things useful, and then, oh, you've created this really useful resource for other people. So that's the principle. Okay, let's come back to, right, we're sharing again. Share screen. Right. Share. Summarize, and then put it into your own knowledge base. Put it into your Google Doc. Put it on your paper, diagram. Put it in your spreadsheet. Doesn't matter what tool you use to organize. All that matters is the tool works for you. Use your own words. I don't let academics tell me what words to use. People are always trying to get me to use a word like praxis. And I say to them, well, what you mean is practice, don't you? And they go, no, praxis. It's totally different. And I say, well, no, it's practice based on theory, right? Yes, but you should use the word practice. And I think that's silly. I use practice. And I'm not interested in a word like praxis. I use personal learning instead of the word hotagogy. Because everybody knows what the words personal learning mean. And more importantly, I know what they mean. But hotagogy is going to be something technical. And then when you use that word, if you use it in the slightest incorrect sense, you'll get drawn into discussions about what the word really means. And it'll pull you away from whatever is useful to you. So I use my own vocabulary. I use my own language. And I don't tell people, I don't let people tell me what words to use. People like to pretend that there is one ideal language that everybody must use, and it's simply not true. Each person uses their own individual version of language, and it kind of meshes, it kind of overlaps, but there is no one single right way to use any of these words. And then simplify. Here it says don't compartmentalize. I've divided everything into topics and subtopics, etc. But I always keep in mind, this is all one really big interrelated mess. And all knowledge is like that. There's this view of knowledge as this thing that is carefully constructed with categories and subcategories. It's all based on an approach to biological taxonomies and Linnaean classification. That's it used for species and things like that. But in the real world, things aren't organized nice and neatly. Everything interacts. Everything is related to everything else. So I think of, even though I divide things up like that, in my mind, I still think, no, this is one large interconnected network of concepts. So I don't separate them, biology is not completely separate from engineering, for example. They're both just two ways of looking at the same thing. So, What are the principles of usability? In a sense, usability is social, in the sense that, you know, at its core, it's thinking about communication. But the first and most important principle is, can you search your own learning? I have in my basement now about, I guess it's 8 or 10 large 2 cubic foot, 2 square cubic, 2 cubic foot boxes, cardboard boxes, 2 cubes is what they're called, filled with notes that I took in university. And I wrote detailed notes when I was studying. They're great notes, but they're useless to me because I can't search through them. I can't find, you know, that thing that John Bordeaux talked about in my second year philosophy class on the history of philosophy. I remember it was great. I would actually have to go down into the basement, move boxes, find the folder with that information in it, leaf through the folder, and maybe I could find it. It would take me like all afternoon. That's why I use something like Google Docs. I can search through it very quickly. And the other thing is consistency, in the sense of, do I represent similar things in similar ways? That's a, you know, that's a bit tricky, and it's a hard concept. But, you know, in different subjects, you'll see the same thing come up over and over again. And this is how a lot of the stuff on networks came to me, is I was seeing the same thing in biology as I was seeing in physics, as I was seeing in chemistry. And then I just started representing them in a similar way. And now I've got this thing that cuts across all of these fields. So, in a sense, it's like mathematics, right? No matter what the discipline is, we're going to use numbers the same way in all of these different disciplines. For me, I use things like forms of argument, different patterns that I've seen, stuff like that. So, if I see something that looks like something else that I've seen, I'll start talking about it in the same way. And it's personal. You know, you have to listen to yourself. You have to ask, you know, is my method of learning working for me? You know, that's, you know, that's probably the most important question to ask. You know, am I actually learning? Am I actually making progress? Am I getting better? Because, you know, I guess, you know, it's that question that Dr. Phil asks, you know, how's it working for you? And yes, I'm quoting Dr. Phil without shame. How's that working for you? You know, always ask yourself that. But ask yourself that of the very specific things that you're doing. I describe learning as a type of networks. How does that work for me? Does that explain the things I need explaining? Does it help me bring concepts together? Does it help me remember? You know? Oops, wrong way. All right, guerrilla tactics. Don't depend on the institution to organize your knowledge. Key. Especially learning management systems, if you're studying at a college or a school, college or university. Because one day, hopefully, you'll graduate and then you won't have access to that anymore. And so your whole knowledge base will have gone poof. So start building your own knowledge management system, your own way of keeping your notes Google Docs, whatever. And as I always say, and back up your data. If you're using Google Docs, make sure you save copies on your own computer. Always have a backup, because these things go away. Even Google Docs. You might think, oh no, Google will never kill Google Docs. They might. They've killed other, even more useful things. So create your own knowledge management system. Create a blog. Just to take notes. Somebody asked earlier, does your blog need to be good? No. You don't even need to tell people it exists, right? You can begin a blog just to take notes. It's a free place to store thoughts. So, you know, go to Blogger, create a blog, take notes. And Blogger and WordPress as well have systems that allow you to tag your notes. So you have your organization of your knowledge, give each thing a tag, and you know, and then use that tag in your blog. That's a really easy way to have all of your notes match your organization. It makes it really easy to search later on. Now you might be asking, what do you mean by tag? Well, what people do is they use what are called hashtags. And a hashtag simply uses the pound sign or the hash sign and then a word or phrase. And so that makes it really easy to search, because you're searching for that specific tag with the hash mark. And so you're getting only that and not just accidental, incidental appearances of that word. It's much easier to search on hash democracy than simple democracy. Because if you just search for the word, you get everything where that word ever appeared. But if you use a tagging system, you get just the stuff you tagged. Save your photos in Flickr. I've been doing that since 2007. I have some 30,000, 40,000, whatever, photos on Flickr now. All of them licensed under Creative Commons, so I'm sharing them as well. Now, my photos are more personal than professional. I've taken pictures of the places that I've been, and I put those up online. But why not? And the thing is, my photos are there. It's a really good backup in case my computer dies, and my computer has died. Or, you know, and I've got a pile of broken disk drives here in my office. So I'm living proof that technology breaks. So store your photos in Flickr. You used to be able to store your photos in Google Docs, Photos, but then Google closed Google Photos. So always back up. Create a Gmail account. This right now, Gmail is my main mail account, but I used to have a separate personal email account, and then Gmail was just a backup. But what I'd do is I'd forward my important emails to Gmail, so I'd have a record of them, and then I could search through them using Google search instead of the email search on my own email, which wasn't very good. So it's kind of a neat idea. I always work with several email accounts. I have different email accounts for different purposes. I think that's a really good trick. You know, it's like Hillary Clinton got in trouble for using her personal email account for business. You should learn from that. You know, separate these things out. Business on your business email account, personal on your personal email account, newsletters on your newsletter email account, important save for later on your important save for later email account. Use Google Desktop Search. I think they closed that. Desktop Search isn't good yet. That's why you should be using things like Google Docs and so on, because, you know, just if you just store everything in files on your computer, the search on your computer isn't good. The search on your mobile phone is even worse. So save it in things like Google Docs or on a blog or something like that. So that's usability. Relevance, I've already addressed a lot to do with relevance. Actually, why don't I stop here and see if there's any comments, because I said I wasn't going fast. So I'll stop here. Check on the time. How is our time doing? Whoops.
Oh, we have, it's 10:53.
Okay, so, yeah, so we're almost done, aren't we?
We can have a part two. We can host part two.
Yeah, so we got a few minutes left, but I will stop here, but see if there are any more comments or questions, and I'll make a commitment now to pick this up in a part two. We'll do another session, you know, maybe in September. I don't know how long these are going on, but why not, right? So are there any comments or questions?
I really am very impressed. I did not think of Blogger in terms of, you know, helping you with writing, and it can be what you want it to be.
Yeah.
I'm also organizing, you know, I learned from you organizing photos, like in Flickr. So you created a Creative Commons, like a repository, your personal repository, which is accessible.
Yeah.
I like your organization skills. I love your table when you showed on the website, because sometimes you need like an index page at a glance or table of contents to quickly go to different places you'll be going. Like you had SlideShare and you had many different tools you are using.
Yeah.
So just organization skills, and even to put headings in Google, because sometimes we find a bit of research, you know, in between, and if we just put a heading and copy and paste 2-3 things, then it's easy for us to continue. I was not doing it. I was not using Google Docs in this manner by giving it headings. And that's better than using a Microsoft Word and giving it a, you know, heading. I think Google Docs can be accessed anywhere. So thank you for sharing these Gorilla tips. And I said in the beginning when you mentioned the feed, you know, I like feeding content, and then we are repackaging it when we're creating our courses. So again, we are feed forward, like that's really cool. I like it. Thank you.
Anyone else? Sure.
Yeah. Hi. Really good presentation. Thank you. Just a multitude of tidbits. I'm not that heavy into, you know, media and stuff, but I often wondered about that hashtag for the Twitter. I did open a Twitter account, and I thought, like, what do you do with that? How do you use it? So I've never used it. Well, that's helpful. And yeah, I do have a separate email for subscriptions and stuff like that. But I kind of went away from it, so I'm going to go back and use it again, because that keeps my main email from getting clogged up. Yeah, so, yeah, just a multitude of little tips, which I really appreciate. Thank you very much.
And with Twitter and hashtags, I actually use TweetDeck. And let me show you this, because you'll love this. Yeah, so, okay, I'll share this. So, I'll go to my homepage, which is this, right? TweetDeck is the application, and it's just tweetdeck.twitter.com. And I'll copy that and put that in the chat in a bit. Now, what's cool is, if I come here to the search in TweetDeck, I'll type in I'll pick a hashtag. Can be any hashtag. And again, I'm going to use the hash symbol. And then, oh yeah, Hurricane Laura. That's a good one. And what TweetDeck will do is it'll create a new column of links for that particular, and it's over here, way over here on the right, for that particular hashtag. So now any tweet that anyone has tweeted using that hashtag, I can read them now. So here's one that I use for open educational resources. It's just a search for the OER hashtag. Here's one for scholar strike. Someone's proposing a scholar strike with respect to Black Lives Matter. Well, that's something that's interesting to me. So I did a search for that hashtag, and now I'm following all the discussion on scholar strike. And remember I talked about back channels? Well, what people do with back channels is they'll come up with their own hashtag. Let's call this Steven's back channel. That can be long, right? And now this is the back channel for us. Now right now it's empty, but anybody who tweets using this hashtag, it will show up in this column. You can see nobody else is using it. So it's a perfect way for us to have our conversation about this session as a back channel while the presentation is going on. Just one warning, everybody can read your tweets, right? Whoever follows you can read your tweets. So don't say anything you wouldn't want to say to all your friends. I love hashtags.
So, Reza, what did you learn? Please unmute and share. Ms. Adala, you're welcome to share what you learned. You're joining us from Kenya, right? Please share if you picked up something interesting.
Yeah, actually, I picked up a lot of good information and tips. What time is it? I think it's 8 p.m. here, so it's been a long day. I woke up at 3. But it's been very, very helpful. And I want to go back and watch the presentation again, but it's a lot of tons of resources and strategies that one can use. I like the creating your website and just a way to organize your content. I'm on Merlot, so I was thinking about, you know, how to start using that. And so that kind of gave me some ideas. And also just creating things using your own voice and making them make meaning for you and stuff like that, and not getting bogged down with other people's definitions and so on. So that was very helpful.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Carla, how can you apply the knowledge that you learned today?
Hi there. I really, really enjoyed the blogging information. I didn't really understand what blogging was about and how it can be supporting my own learning. I've never blogged, and I don't think I've read a blog. I really like the idea of and understanding the importance of interaction between, you know, the human contact, also building community online. I also like the idea that students should not be using me as the only resource, that they should be accessing other resources for their own learning and being active in that. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing, Carla. Holly, it says iPhone Holly, please share if you think you learned something today. this chat. You're welcome to share your learnings, because you know it's really feeding forward for the next session.
Mm-hmm.
Helps us to know what we should focus on, you know, the concepts or the tech tools, because today was a beautiful session which had a blend of both, you know, like consistency. Okay, so this was very interesting. Awesome. So on behalf of all of us, I'd like to thank Dr. Downs, and he will be doing part two, because there was so much knowledge he has, which he's willing to share, and we are willing to learn. Thank you so much. Ms. Tahi Ninanaskamon Pematasovan Enikosia. So on behalf of all of us in this learning circle and the Muscogee Cultural College, Dr. Downs, we are very grateful, and please do, we look forward to learning again from you. Reza, you're welcome to share if you would like to share. Reza, what did you learn today?
Hi. I just worked for a very quick moment for the a phone ring. Yeah, I really appreciate for the your presentation. I mean, your presenters and your and it's a kind of the category of learning is a very interesting area for both learners and instructors. That was wonderful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Downs, and I will end this session. I've stopped the recording, so you still have a couple of seconds if you want to ask. You know, it's just like hanging outside the classroom, or you can ask your instructor for something if you would like to chat with him for a couple of seconds, or connect with him or with any of the participants, because it is also networking opportunities. And we call this a learning circle because, mm-hmm. See, we come together from all different fields, from Kenya to you know, we have people from all over who are listening. And it's not being recorded, so you can say what you like.
So I'm just curious, because you are one of the original people that came up with the MOOCs has really blown up, and it's a big thing now. And so what are your thoughts on that? And do you, based on your research, do you see anything coming up in the future?
Yeah, my first thought about MOOCs is, well, they're all doing it wrong. no, I'm just kidding. For me, the important thing about MOOCs was always that it's free and open online learning. And what the success of MOOCs has meant is that this now is a permanent thing. We'll never go back to the days where there's no such thing as open learning. And that to me is really significant. And, you know, it almost doesn't matter if they're following the right model or doing it exactly right. The main thing is people now are offering learning online for free. And that to me is really important. The other things coming up, if you go to my thing that said e-learning 3.0, you can access that from my start page. That's the stuff that I think is new, and that includes things like cloud technologies, data-based content, blockchain, the idea of community as consensus, and some similar topics. And these are the sorts of things that I think will be important in learning and in learning technologies, probably starting about 5 to 10 years from now.
Question about you know, insight into future, like feeding forward again in another way, the future. Thank you. So, once again, Ms. Tahi, Ninanas, Simone, Gamakisto, and Emikosian, thank you so much for attending. And I will end this meeting and I'll send a recording and I'll communicate with all of you about the date for our next presentation.
And thank all of you. I thank all of you for taking the time to come and listen to talk to me. I really appreciate that. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Manisha.